The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for another award-winning edition of the hottest show on the airwaves. It is Kiefer and Curry. I'm Kip Kiefer. He's Tony Curry. And Tony, week to week, if folks are not familiar with our format, basically you and I go back and forth. This is my week to select the topic and kind of lead things off. And I thought this week I was going to go a different direction, but I had a thought Sunday evening in prime time, which is a key fact to consider when I tell you what I was watching. It was about 9 o'clock, pitch dark outside. And yet I was watching the drama coming down the stretch of the 138th United States Golf Open at night because yeah. It was being played at LA Country Club in the shadow of the Hollywood sign and Sunset Boulevard. And right off the 14th tee, how American is this? The Playboy Mansion, Hugh Hefner's home for many years. At one point, when guys were about ready to hit, there was a bunch of weird noises. And Dan Hicks, the play-by-play man, goes, "Something is really stirring up the peacocks over there at the Playboy Mansion."
I've actually done a show from the Playboy Mansion. So, yes, the peacocks are alive and well, despite the fact that Hugh is so 6 feet underground.
Is that not America or what?
That is America.
So watching golf in prime time, and it was awesome. And it was the ultimate kind of story of the no-name guy. His name's Wyndham Clark. He's been a pro for 8 or 9 years. He's had a lot of struggles. He hasn't had a lot of success. He only won his first tournament about a month ago to even get into the top 50 to qualify for the U.S. Open. And he was facing down in the final groups Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, Ricky Fowler, all of these marquee major names, and Wyndham Clark. So you kind of just threw him out right away. This guy is a pair of brown shoes and a closet full of tuxedos. But I watched this guy grit it out and make just amazing saves on the really demanding course and take a 2-stroke lead over all of those guys who were fighting just to stay afloat. And he went to the number 15th hole, which was the shortest par 3 in U.S. Open history, just under 100 yards, only played 81 yards from the front tee box on Saturday. Statistically, the pros just carved it up. It's the second easiest scoring hole in average in the U.S. Open's history. Every player, Tony, all 80 guys that had already come through there as Clark played in the last group, had made par or better on the 15th hole. Mm-hmm. Wyndham Clark, after playing flawlessly, bogey-free golf and having a 2-stroke lead in the Open, goes there, hits his shot over the green in the back to a bad spot, chips it up, does not make the putt. He makes the only bogey of the day. He's the only guy, the 2-stroke leader, that bogeys the easiest hole basically in U.S. Open history. So his lead's down to 1. He promptly bogeys the next hole, and he's facing the 2 toughest scoring holes in recent years in the U.S. Open. He's got to make pars on both of those to win the deal. And what does he do? He reaches down and grits it out and beats Rory McIlroy, who has not won a major now in 9 years after winning 5 in his first 20 appearances. And I had the thought, I said, we got to do a show. Man, I'm loving this. The drama, so many parallels in life of really calling on yourself for your best at the time where it's most critical. Also, the preparation that goes in and the hard work. I just said to myself out loud, damn, I love sports. And I wanted to hear your impressions and hear why you love it, because I know you do.
No, and as we do this show here on June 20th, of course, you can hear this show at least 5 days a week here on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast, search Kiefer and Curry Show. My Cincinnati Reds, who were picked out of all Major League Baseball teams, the least amount of wins, according to Vegas. It's 64.5 going into the season. They were supposed to be worse than the Oakland Athletics, All right. Another team that's kind of gotten hot recently. But my Cincinnati Reds last night here on June 20th have won their ninth game, and they are in first place in their division 73 games into the season. Joey Votto gets off the bench for his first game of 2023, plays first base, bats sixth. And I'm thinking to myself, do I really want to see a guy who's been with that squad for 10 years come in and screw up the chemistry? He hits a bomb and then hits a two-run single to actually win the game for the Cincinnati Reds. And they're in first place going into the All-Star break here in less than a month. And they're supposed to win 64 games. I mean, that's why we love sports. It's just a great story. And, you know, I will say this. If I never get Alzheimer's, it's going to be because I did a show with you. You make me think so much and so deep and so hard on some of these great topics. And just to throw out the question of why we love sports, there is no right answer here. There is no single right answer why we love sports so much. And that in itself is the answer. I can't say why we love sports, but I can tell you why I love sports. And I think that cumulative effect of all of us together makes sports just so wonderful. And so, you know, I was going through, people bet on it. It's exciting. Everyone loves a winner and loser. It reminds us of when we played, and maybe, you know, we get something from that. We get self-esteem from it. It's a venue for emotional expression. Where else can you go and scream your brains out? There's some people that I know are so laid back, they never raise their voice. And then you go to an Alabama, Auburn, or UAB football game, and they're screaming their brains out. It brings in testosterone. It brings in adrenaline. It brings in oxytocin. It brings in cortisol. It's unbelievable. It's an escape from our world's problems. It's triumphant. It's heart-wrenching all at the same time, which is, in a sense, life. It helps us dream in this country. We idolize our celebrities, and we idolize our sports figures, and we can live our lives precariously through their lives on the field. So, yeah, there's all kinds of different reasons, but, and I know we'll get into this a little bit later on, but what a great topic why we love sports, because for me, it means three different things, and we'll talk about that. But a great topic, man.
Well, thanks, Tony. I appreciate that. I also had the thought, you know, I had a great experience with my son and about 18,000 of our closest friends recently, going to a lot of the games on the road to the Stanley Cup Championship that the Las Vegas Golden Knights just won. Was able to go to four of those games in T-Mobile Arena, which is a genius location. It's built right next to the New York Hotel, right off the Vegas Strip. I mean, you talk about a glitzy place for an arena. The parties pregame, it's so much fun for me because I lived in Atlanta as in high school when the Atlanta Flames, the first hockey team ever to come to the South, came, and the city absolutely fell in love with these kind of workaday, seemingly just gritty Canadian kids, mostly some Americans, but mostly kids that came from farms and rural situations that, you know, their ticket out was to be great at hockey. And they weren't the most skilled players, but these are guys that just, you know, dug down and came up with tremendous efforts and just in sheer grit and determination won over cities. And I saw the same thing in Vegas, and it was just so awesome to have a chance all these decades later to kind of fall in love with a game that I really identified with. And when I say that, as a high schooler in Atlanta without two nickels to rub together, we found a way to get down to every game at the Omni for 5 or 6 straight years. And basically, we just hustled tickets outside, tried to round up a few tickets, went down there with maybe $10 in our pocket, you know, bought a couple of tickets. Somebody just wanted to unload them on the way in. Sold those and got some more money so we could get better tickets. It was a cottage industry that we invented, and that was sort of the beginning. I talk about my dad a lot, who was maybe not the best dad traditionally that you can imagine, but he absolutely loved sports. Was a great athlete himself, and really. I'll be eternally grateful for him introducing me to sports as a real little kid in Washington, D.C., going to, and I'm going to say it because that's what they were called at the time, the Washington Redskins, going to Redskin games and having the chance in their primes to see guys like Johnny Unitas and Bart Starr and some of the biggest stars, you know, in NFL history. I remember Gale Sayers' rookie year. Wow. Just phenomenal performers. And those experiences sitting in those games and being part of such a community of like-minded people, and nothing brings people together like sports. You can have complete, you could be sitting next to the biggest, and you know, in my case, you know, liberal progressive who, you know, who I completely disagree with, or, you know, somebody who has, you know, different views or religious beliefs. Not that any of that is a bad thing, but the nice thing is that in that setting, you are totally united with the people around you. You're high-fiving people. You're talking about the game. There's really no experience like it.
And in a world of things that we love records, there's a record that's being broken every single day, and that is in the sports world, because we have more sports fans today than we had yesterday, and we'll have more tomorrow than we did today. It's amazing to me, too, because, and you bring this up, it's such a huge connection. I was out in Las Vegas about 7-8 years ago, and I was sitting next to two guys who obviously had a little too much to drink at a blackjack table, and they go to fisticuffs, and then they're just beating the living bejeebers out of each other. Chips are flying all over the place. They're on the floor. They're rolling around. The cops come over. They throw them out, and about a half an hour later, I go to use the bathroom, and I'm looking outside, and I see these same two guys standing next to each other outside on the balcony, outside at Caesars, and they're smoking a cigarette. And I walked out, and they're bleeding. Their shirts are ripped, and I was like, what's going on here? And I thought they were actually working together to maybe try to rip off the casino. I didn't know. They had something in common. They smoke cigarettes. It's amazing how you can have a huge argument with somebody. You go out and you see someone smoking a cigarette. You ask him for a cigarette. Next thing you know, you're your best buddies. It is a connection that we have. There's nothing better, Kip, than being outside your metropolitan area, outside Birmingham or wherever you live, and seeing someone wearing a jersey of your favorite team on the street in Tupelo or in San Francisco, and you're like, go Reds or go Blazers or whatever. It's just that connection that we have with a much bigger, wider world, and that's a wonderful thing. And you just said it. You were sitting with 18,000 of your closest friends in Las Vegas watching the NHL Stanley Cup, and that's just a huge part of what we are when it comes to humanity. We can all be part of something bigger and better. And for the most part, I know, you know, when we all started getting back together again after COVID, and it was a great experience, we saw just a hell of a lot of fights in the stands. I think things are tempered down just a little bit. But to be part of something bigger than ourselves, I think, is something that sports is just really, really good at.
Yeah, I'd tell you a story, too, of you know, as we're talking about, this is Kiefer and Curry, we're talking about why we love sports. That's the subject this week. I had the opportunity, it's been quite a few years now, let's see, back in 2014, my dad was at a very late stage in his life. He would pass away in 2016, but he was born and raised in Washington, D.C., and that's where he grew up and again was a lifelong Redskin fan and was totally into horse racing and his devotion to that sport and taking me to Laurel or Bowie or Pimlico, the three tracks in the area, depending on which one was open, almost every Saturday. As a very little guy, 5-6 years old, I think I've joked on this show before, I didn't learn to read from seeing C-Spot run. I learned to read from see the seven horse run and looking at his form in the daily racing form, trying to figure out how he had done that. I always like to brag I was a better handicapper than my dad when I was in the second grade. But anyway, so there were so many roots of my sports life and got the chance to take my dad and brother. My dad had left his native land and moved to Florida about 25 years before and unbelievably had never been back to Washington, D.C. He just didn't really, after a life of traveling for the Johnson Wax Company, he really didn't want to travel anymore. He was set up nicely in a great beachfront condo down in Cocoa Beach. And he was loving life, but I got a chance to get some really good tickets to the Preakness. And I took he and my brother, and we kind of had a weekend of, you know, getting back to our roots and our native land. The point of all this is we went out to see my original house where I was first lived, 12202 Hunter's Lane in Rockville, Maryland, right at the edge of Metro Washington. And we drove out and found the house with God bless GPS, because nobody really could remember. We moved to Atlanta when I was 8 years old. So I hadn't been there at that time for 50 years. And amazingly, the house was still standing and still looked to be, time had just marched on. But I had an inclination right when we were starting to leave. I said, make a left right here, just up the street from the house, because I had a flashback. And we went up to the top of the hill and made another left. And there was a narrow street there that was much different than I've pictured it in my mind for my years. But a lot of my love affair of sports came from that street. And I wanted to just stand there for just a second and remember, because when I was about 5 years old, there was always bigger kids who, they were probably very mature, about eight at the time, that played football in that street. And isn't that the great thing about sports too, Tony, that every place is a potential field?
Yes.
The brick wall behind your house, the narrow street up the hill, any place that you can have a ball and some kind of an area to play. They played football up there, touch football. And as a 5 or 6 year old, I remember specifically on a really cold day, I was up there, it was almost dark. There was a kid threw a long pass to another kid, and I just was kind of running around. The ball took this weird deflection and landed right in my arms, like something out of a B movie. And I just ran. I just remember running as fast as my little legs could carry me. And I scored. It was my first ever touchdown against the big kids. And I've always remembered that moment, and getting to stand in that spot and kind of recall it is just another thing that has really prompted this lifelong obsession and love I have for sports.
And to your point, every space was an area, it was a field, but everything was a sport. I mean, we got to the point where we couldn't find a couple of bases, we used trees. And if we didn't have trees, we just did two bases and we play a thing called pickle. I don't think kids even play pickle. Now we have pickle ball, but we used to have a game called pickle where you just have two kids on either end of a field and you'd have a kid in the middle and you had to get from one base to the other without getting tagged out. And we'd play that for hours. Could you imagine having to get together with extended family you haven't seen maybe in years, maybe you have crazy uncles. We all have extended families. You get 16, 17 people in the same house. Could you imagine what Thanksgiving would be without professional football, without that respite, without that idea of saying, at least I can stay out of the kitchen. I can just sit and watch, football with an uncle that I have nothing in common with. I don't even know where to start to ask questions. But because we have sports on television, because we get professional football, I can actually enjoy this. You were bringing up the things about your sons, and that's one of the reasons I love sports is my 18-year-old son loves sports probably more than I do. He loves sports so much that when I was doing sports radio, he would actually join us during March Madness. He knows more about sports. He can give you the starting lineup for the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't know why. The kid's unbelievable. He's getting into sports management, sports communication at college. And one of the reasons he's going to Clemson, because he wanted to go to a great sports school.
Awesome.
And that's something that we do together. And I'll never forget it. My son is not a hugger. He's not a touchy person. He doesn't like to be touched. My other two kids are big huggers. They love the compression. But I took him to a Tennessee Titans game when they played the playoffs against the Cincinnati Bengals 2 years ago. And the Cincinnati Bengals, of course, won that game on a last second field goal on their way to the Super Bowl, in which they would lose. And he gave me the best hug I think I've ever received in my life and held on to me for about 30 seconds. He was crying. He was so happy. And that's what sports bring out. And I just couldn't believe it because, I thought, am I going to hug my son? What am I going to do? And I'm always going to, I usually do the one arm wrap. I even do it at church. I give him the one arm wrap. I don't do the two arm because I don't want to make him feel like it. He wrapped both arms around me. He was so happy to see the Bengals win that game. And that's what sports bring out. And I think that's, you bring up the fact that your father and you had a special relationship through sports. I didn't have a real special relationship sports-wise with my father. We did a lot of things. My dad maybe took me to one or two Reds games my entire life. We never went to a Bengals game. And it was just the way it was. And then I got into sports, obviously, through my radio career, and I just absolutely fell in love with it. I will go as far as to say that when I first got to town, and what's the first question everyone says? Who are you rooting for? Auburn, Alabama. I didn't know what they were talking about. and I did classic rock for 20 years, and, of course, it also crossed over with sports, and I just absolutely fell in love with the sports arena. But that's one of the reasons that I love sports, if for no other reason. You know, when my son comes over here and I get him 7-on-7 off, when they come over here, the TV's on ESPN 24 hours a day. And I normally have a difficult time settling in at the night. You know, it's 7:30, 8 o'clock. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I have a difficult time relaxing watching sports because I get so entrenched, engaged in whatever's being played. And right now it's the College World Series. And you know, I'll look at my son and he'll look at me and he'll know. He's like, you want to watch Dad TV, don't you? You want to watch the Discovery Channel? You want to watch the History Channel? You want to see, you know, River Monsters or some crap? You want to watch the flipping Weather Channel, Weather Gone Viral or something? And I'm like, you know what? I'm good, son. I said, you watch whatever you want. I'm going to watch it with you. My dad would have never let me watch what I wanted to when he was watching television. Of course, I was the antenna, right? We went up there and we watched. And that's the other thing. And you've just brought up so many memories for me. Kip, when I got to town in 1988, Alabama football was on 3 times a year. You had two games that you could watch, and then you had a PPV. And chances are you weren't paying the $19.99 to watch that PPV. And so that was it. You saw two games a year, unless you are, of course, a season ticket holder or you went to Alabama football games. And back then, you could actually afford to do that. I remember seeing an Alabama-Florida game. It was $70 for a pair of tickets. I could do that. Now it's probably $700. But I do want to give kudos to television because, you know, we went from four channels if you had, you know, public television wherever you lived. To now thousands of channels, and now you've got stadium TV, you've got, you know, Bally's TV, you've got the network television. I mean, you've got all these networks thriving to play, and you could pretty much never leave your house and watch whatever you want to watch at any given time. ESPN Plus, which is pretty amazing. I think it's another reason why we love sports more than we ever have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought up TV because, again, young people that I talked about GPS before, they can't even conceive the idea of having a map and an address. And
do you remember going to pick up your first girlfriend and you get her on the phone, not the cordless, but the phone? You didn't have cordless phones. Yeah. We weren't rich enough to have cordless phones. You had the phone. You'd take it into the bathroom, and of course, you'd have one of these wires that was like 30 feet long. You'd take it from the kitchen to the bathroom, and you'd write down on a piece of paper, okay, I'm going to take a right turn where now? And then I'm going to take a left turn. And we would drive around neighborhoods. I would leave like a half an hour early for dates because I didn't want to be that guy driving up and down past her house 15 times because I was looking like a dolt. I wanted to make sure I knew where I was going. But yes, we used to have to write down our directions, folks. That's the way life used to be.
Absolutely. And on that phone call, her dad would answer. Yikes.
Oh, did you ever have a party line? Oh, geez. Where you had the next door neighbors answering the phone?
Exactly. The point, of course, being that we didn't have GPS, of course, and we didn't have ESPN, the horror. Mm-hmm. Remember when ESPN first started? It was like the greatest thing ever. Are you telling me that a show's going to come on every other hour with all the highlights from all the games that have just been played? That was just cutting edge.
We didn't think it was going to go. I remember thinking, there's no way you have enough content to have sports for 24 hours a day.
Because they didn't have any content. They had SportsCenter like hourly because they had nothing else to put on.
Yeah.
So, but that was amazing because people don't remember this, but one of the biggest draws of Monday Night Football when it started in 1971, first of all, the fact they were playing in prime time on a Monday night was just astounding. But the biggest lure of that show for me as a kid was the halftime highlights, because there was no such thing as that before.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Cosell would come on with the halftime highlights. Yesterday at Denver, and they would show the most dramatic, amazing catches of the day. I mean, it just transformed the way that you could follow sports. And I can even go back further than that. Back when I was a kid in the 60s, I was such a junkie for sports that on Sunday mornings, and like you said, on Saturday, there would be like one college football game from the whole country on. Yep. It was like ABC's Game of the Week. And I can remember as a kid sitting in my mother's car with the AM radio on, Alabama and Georgia played in 1971, and I just wasn't going to miss that game, but it wasn't on TV. I sat in the car in 95-degree heat out in my driveway. It was an early season game in Athens. Georgia beat Alabama 21-0, which was like the greatest miracle ever because nobody beat Alabama. Mm-hmm. And but I listened in the car radio, and that was not unusual. But I was going to go back to the 60s. There were two shows on back-to-back on Sunday morning, both half-hour highlight packages with Notre Dame football followed by Grambling football highlights.
Wow.
Now, I had no sense of race. I didn't care if it was Martians playing. Grambling was a great school with great tradition. I became a huge Grambling fan, and I didn't even know where Grambling was. But it was football, and they narrated the games and showed highlights and coaches' shows. And I tell you, Tony, it's something that you know, people that say, well, I'm not really into sports, I just kind of shake my head and go, well, I feel sorry for you, because it's the greatest accompaniment to this life that I can imagine.
The one show I used to watch, 10:30 every Saturday morning on WCPO, it was the CBS affiliate in Cincinnati, Mel Allen's This Week in Baseball. I mean,
what a show.
I would miss Bugs Bunny. I would miss anything, but I wasn't missing Mel Allen's This Week in Baseball at 10:30. And people are like, well, he would talk about all the games from the previous week. Now, you know, if a game's played on a Sunday night, you're talking about it on a Tuesday, you're old hat, man. I mean, we used to talk about stuff that was 6-7 days old, but it was such a great package. Mel Allen's name was just synonymous with Major League Baseball. You know, something else, Kip, and this is the Kiefer and Curry show here on Tony Curry Radio and wherever you get your podcast. One of the things that I love about sports that we have failed to mention, and I think you'll go along with this, not to get warm and sappy and fuzzy here, but sports are good for humanity. And we can learn a lot from our sports figures and our sports idols and how they react to each other. Hell, let's go back to the Roman days. The gladiators were friends. They used to kill each other. They would kill each other. There would be two men or two women, and they would try to kill each other. But before they tried to kill each other, there was a mutual respect. There was a friendship. They lived together. They worked together. They practiced their craft together. And then they get out there and try to kill each other. Something that and we've gotten away from it a little bit. And it really bothers me when I don't see handshakes at the end of ball games. And I know in hockey, they usually handshake with each other. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I know it's a violent sport. Sometimes I'll see, you know, hey, listen, we've got an agreement. We're not going to shake hands after the game because we're not going to be sure what happens after the game, which I think is really sad and I think the NBA is probably the best at this because it is such a physical sport now. And you see these guys who are just beating the shit out of each other for 48 minutes. And then at the end of the game, they're hugging each other and they're loving on each other. And they're like, great game, despite the fact. And it's super cool for me to see a team that's just absolutely been, just absolutely had their heart ripped out at the last second, going to the other team and showing sportsmanship. It doesn't whether you're black, you're white, you're Asian, whatever. It doesn't matter what you do on social media. It doesn't matter who you talk to or what you say to those people. But when you're on the field of play, there's a respect for each sportsman on that field and on that court. And I just think that we can learn a lot from that sportsmanship in life. I really do. I just think it's one of the reasons I love sports.
Yeah, it's a great point. And that is one of the, you mentioned the NHL, which I started off talking about. It is the tradition in the Stanley Cup playoffs and it's one of the most compelling pictures in sports, while the other team, and we recently saw it with the Golden Knights, wrapped up the Stanley Cup against the Florida Panthers, who had an amazing run through the playoffs, eliminated the top three seeds in the East as the 8th seed. But it's always a really compelling picture because in the Stanley Cup playoffs, both teams line up starting at center ice all the way back to their goal, the long line of not only the players, but the coaches, the staffs, and they go through a man-to-man, one-at-a-time handshake, look each other in the eye, say great game, and that picture of the other team celebrating in their end and the team that's been vanquished lined up, leaning on their sticks, waiting for the handshake ceremony is really compelling. And you see guys that just beat the you-know-what out of each other throughout the series, some guys that have actually engaged in fights, but when they get to that moment, the appreciation for the other team's accomplishment and the losing team's effort is really one of those pictures that just stays with you.
It reminds me of Lawyers.
It's one of the great traditions.
It reminds me of Lawyers. You'll see, if you've ever been a court of law, and I hope you haven't, but a lot of us are going to go through at some point in our life, you'll see two lawyers getting as nasty as possible, and then the next Tuesday you'll see out them having drinks and dinner together laughing.
Absolutely.
You're like, how is that possible? But yeah, if you can leave it on the court, you can leave it on the field, man. It's just a beautiful thing, but I just love that about sports.
Yeah, and also there's always the possibility, and I think anybody that's of any significant age in terms of number of years, there's always sports. Sports is also, Tony, about possibilities. Yes. The 1980 Miracle on Ice, when the USA, a bunch of college kids, not professionals, played the mightiest hockey team on earth, the Soviet Union, in the Olympics at Lake Placid, New York, and won that game, a 22-year-old Al Michaels, who's still on the air now, 43 years later, Al Michaels famously declared, "Do you believe in miracles?" Yes. Mm-hmm. The United States 4, the Soviet Union 3. Tony, they had played 2 weeks before in Madison Square Garden in a tune-up game, an exhibition game before the Olympics began. And the Soviets beat the U.S. team 12-3.
Yeah.
And here, 2 weeks later, this ragtag bunch of 18 and 19-year-old college kids played the mightiest team on earth. Just to even emphasize at this point, because it's hard to believe, the Soviets did a tour of the country here, a four-game tour of North America the year before, and played NHL teams in the best hockey league in the world, and won 3 of those 4 games against NHL teams the year before. And the USA kids in the Miracle on Ice won that game. And the entire country, which was in the midst of the Carter administration and economic collapse and everything was terrible, it completely just shot a massive amount of adrenaline into the whole country and nationalized and excited everybody. And again, there's so many of those kind of moments in sports. We just saw the Belmont Stakes and footage of Secretariat, who was a four-legged athlete, winning by 31 lengths, smashing the world record for times at a mile and a half. That record still stands today from 1973. I mean, there's just so many exemplary performances you can think of that are just life-defining and society-forming. It's just the greatest thing there is.
And would you think you'd ever have a woman trainer winning a Triple Crown race after 155 years?
Yeah, that's just awesome.
Which is absolutely crazy. And you know, we talked about this in a previous show about David and Goliath, and of course, you know your military history. You talked about some of the great battles this country has had where we just should have not even been on the same battlefield with these other countries, and we pulled things off. And I think that's something that we really love. And that's what I'll finally leave it with this. I think that we all love hope. We love things to look forward to. We always like to know there's a chance. I think I've got it. So you're saying I have a chance? Not an
exactly.
So you're saying I have a chance. You're saying I have a shot. And again, you know, I mentioned the Cincinnati Reds. Do I think they're going to win the division? I don't know. Joey Votto just came out and said, listen, this team's got this aura about it that I've never felt in my entire baseball career. And I don't know if he's BSing us or not, but for Joey Votto to say that guy has won an MVP, who's played in the playoffs, and says this team's got something I've never felt before is really, really amazing. And I just, you know, when you have something to look forward to and you have something to root for that's bigger in your life than you, and it could be your dreams, it could be you, it could be your brother, your sister, or your favorite team, that's something pretty special too.
That's for sure. You got to work for many years with two guys that realized some of the highest pinnacles of sports. Jay Barker, of course, who won a national championship for Alabama, and your guy, we talked about Al last week, but Al Del Greco, who set a lot of scoring records as a fabulous kicker and participated in the Super Bowl. Those guys have been to the highest mountain of sports, but all of us share in that. I mean, the individuals that actually earn those distinctions, if that's our teams and our guys, we're all part of that. And I can't think of anything else in life that even compares.
Great show, man. Kiefer and Curry Show, you can hear it at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. Download the TKR app. Be part of 100,000 people that have already done that. Of course, wherever you get your favorite podcast, we're available on every major industry. Tony Curry Radio Podcast, or search Kiefer and Curry, and it's the only Kiefer and Curry podcast out there. And we're proud of that. Great show, my man. I'll pick something for us next week. We'll get after it.
Can't wait, Tony. Tune in. Go Cincinnati. Go Reds.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.